You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast from Canada House on the 7th of August 2012 on Monocle 24. Midori House is brought to you in association with Thailand.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Midori House with me, Robert Pound, and Tom Edwards.
It's day 7 of our special Olympic programmes, and today we're broadcasting live from Canada House at Trafalgar Square.
Over the next hour, we'll discuss the diplomatic significance of the Games with the Canadian High Commissioner to London, Gordon Campbell.
And we'll check in with two journalists from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation to see how the country's media is reporting Canada's quest for gold.
We'll also get a feel for the many nationalities visiting the capital by gauging the mood in London's Trafalgar Square.
All that, plus some Canadian tunes, some Olympic athletes, and a visit to Canada House's beauty parlour, right here on Midori House on Monocle 24.
But first, let's cross back to the studio at Midori House for the news headlines with James Luckhurst.
Monocle 24 News. Syrian rebels trying to fight off an army offensive in Aleppo have said they are running low on ammunition as President Bashar al-Assad's forces encircle their stronghold at the southern entrance to the country's biggest city. President Assad has reinforced his troops in preparation for an assault to recapture rebel-held districts of Aleppo after repelling fighters from most of Damascus. One of the rebel commanders has said the Syrian army is trying to encircle them from two sides of Salah ad-Din. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has said that the crisis in Syria must not be allowed to descend into sectarian warfare, and she warned against proxies or terrorist fighters being sent in to join the conflict. Mrs. Clinton said the international community must step up work on planning for a post-Assad Syria.
It is a very difficult time for the people of Syria, but I hope that we will look at the urgent tasks that I think confront people of Syria and the international community and think through how we can address them. First, we must figure out ways to hasten the day when the bloodshed ends and the political transition begins.
The market value of Standard Chartered has tumbled $15 billion after New York's bank regulator threatened to tear up its state banking license for hiding $250 billion in transactions tied to Iran. The New York State Department of Financial Services said that Standard Chartered was a rogue institution that schemed with the Iranian government, which is subject to U.S. sanctions over its nuclear program, and hid 60,000 secret transactions to generate hundreds of millions of dollars in fees over nearly 10 years. Investment analyst James Bevan said there was a risk the bank could face further penalties.
The real challenges, of course, are what other regulators would step into the fray and say, well, actually, you have broken all sorts of global rules on money laundering. At the moment, I think the market's view is that there is far more likely to be a fine, although it's very clear that the two sides are so far apart in terms of determining the scale of the challenge that we have a lot further to go. And indeed, it's unlikely we will see any real clarity until the 15th of August when Standard Chartered meets with the New York authority.
Security sources in Egypt say work has begun to seal off smuggling tunnels into the Gaza Strip 2 days after gunmen shot dead 16 Egyptian border guards in an attack blamed partly on Palestinian jihadi militants. As officials considered how to strike back after the assault, crowds of angry mourners wept at the military funeral for the guards in Cairo. The latest in a series of heat waves hit Greece today, with temperatures reaching 42 degrees Celsius. The Greek Meteorological Service issued an extreme weather warning, and authorities advised residents to watch for symptoms of heat stroke. People in Athens took measures to protect themselves from the stifling heat. Armed with umbrellas and water bottles, tourists defied the heat to visit the Acropolis and the capital's other sites. But many said the heat was too much for them to enjoy the city properly.
I expected something like that, but not that much, but at least it's dry. But yeah, it's bloody hot.
With this winter, it's really hard to go and travel in the streets. So we try to drink so much. This is one thing that we can do.
Usually we drink water and just go to restaurant and cafe.
Actually, we got used to the heat. I'm not aware of any heat wave going on, but we enjoy it.
And those are the top stories here at Monocle 24.
Thanks, James. You're listening to a special edition of Midori House. Today, we're at Canada House here in the centre of London.
But you couldn't hear that because you couldn't hear. You wouldn't know necessarily that we are in the centre of London, would you, Tom?
No, there's not the usual hustle and bustle.
If you make some noise, that's my bus noise.
That was good.
It's kind of it's very difficult to kind of. But we're in Canada House, which is a beautiful building. We're in the kind of middle of it, though, aren't we?
We are. We're in a sort of a lair in the middle. I walked in up the grand staircase.
Did you?
Where many eminent diplomats have walked before. Very impressive.
Yeah. Did you sort of puff your chest out? Did you feel you had to fill the space?
Yeah, I felt like a youthful dictator.
We should explain that maybe you can even hear the acoustics. We are in a sort of like slightly windowless room. I think that maybe we're not trusted. What do you think?
I think we're very trusted. It could be that this room is where some of the Canadian medalists come to be photographed shortly after their victories.
I think, behind me, we can set the scene slightly. There's a big sign with the Canadian maple leaf. It's very good, by the way, next to the Olympic rings, isn't it? The Canadian logo.
It looks like it belongs adjacent to
it. And it says tout donner, which I believe it means eat all of your kebab in French.
That is the colloquialism. I thought it or alternatively, give your everything.
Give everything, yeah. So that's where we are. And we've kind of got some people. We've pre-recorded some of this show, haven't we? We've got some bits and pieces coming in. We've already met some people.
We've met some bona fide Olympians.
And we met some Mounties.
Mounties, everything. We're checking off every possible Canadian person.
I thought it was manatees to begin with. I wondered what was going on. I wondered where the pool was.
Yeah, they would need to remain in water.
And first up, I think we've got some... We're covering media in this show.
Absolutely. It's been a key kind of strand of the Olympics this year, how different nations covered the games, the specifics, the peculiarities, if you like, of their local coverage. So we'll be taking a look at that.
And we've also got the High Commissioner on the show.
Absolutely.
Are you going to tuck your shirt in?
I really should do, shouldn't I?
I think we both are.
We look like a pair of slobs.
I think they'll probably play like a promo or something and we can tuck our shirts
you
in,
need to tidy
do up
yourself
our top buttons.
Up. You need to tidy yourself up, Bound.
And then we can rock and roll. For the moment, though, it's 7 minutes past 6 p.m. here and you're listening to a special Canadian version of Midori House live on Monocle 24.
The Olympics on Monocle 24.
As Olimpíadas estão chegando a Monocle 24.
Olympijski teidrissa pro Monocle 24.
Lontoosta maailmalle, Monaco 24.
The Olympics in Spiele of Monaco 24.
The Olympics on Monaco 24.
We're broadcasting live today from Canada House in London's Trafalgar Square, right in the centre of London.
And while parts of London have been quiet during the Olympics, there's no doubt that people from around the world have flooded in to watch them games themselves. So we sent our man, Adrian Craddock, out in central London to meet some of them.
Hi, I'm Liz Clark and I'm from Australia.
And Jeff Clark from Australia. And how are you enjoying London, being here during the Olympics?
It's an unusual experience because it's so busy, but the movement of traffic is fantastic. The number of people around helping you, if you aren't sure where you're going, fantastic. Really well organised.
And how have you found the atmosphere in the city? Is it electric?
Very exciting, and needless to say, with the English winning 70 gold medals, even more so.
We picked you out actually because you're wearing some pretty unusual pants. Can you just describe them for us?
It's the Australian flag, Union Jack on one leg with the Southern Cross stars on the rest.
And have you been rooting for the Australians during the Olympics?
Trying to.
We haven't been doing too well, actually.
Yeah.
High expectations coming in here, a number of sports we were traditionally good at, cycling, swimming, etc. We haven't done well.
Yep.
There's going to be recriminations at home.
I've been to many countries with my work, and it really feels very similar to the United States. The people have been friendly, lots of smiles, just like on your guys' faces, and we've had a wonderful time.
And are you here working at the Olympics or you're just here for fun?
We actually are. We're part of an organization called Athletes in Action, and we're a Christian sports ministry based out of Ohio, and we're working with athletes and coaches on the spiritual side of life as chaplains, mentors, things like that.
Hello, my name is Mirka Miklošová. I'm from Slovak country.
Mm-hmm. Are you enjoying your time in London here? Are you here for the Olympics?
Yeah, London is very beautiful. Our group, containing 12 members, mm-hmm. We very enjoy the time in London. Mm-hmm. It's very beautiful.
And how is Slovakia? How is it going with the Olympics? Have you guys won many medals?
I think we have 48 people in Olympic Games, starting in Olympic Games. Mm-hmm. And today they were canoe, females and men, four member canoe, mm-hmm. 500 meters, I think. We are very happy. We are proud of them that they are in Olympic Games and they starting under our flag, our Slovakia.
Yeah. I'm Moritz, I'm from Hanover, from the north of Germany.
And I'm Roman, and I'm also from Hanover.
Uh-huh. And why are you guys in London at the moment?
Because of the Olympics, uh-huh. of course.
We're watching beach volleyball tonight.
Oh, great, great. So how's Germany going so far?
That's not fair. they do their best, but Team GB is unbeatable. They have a very good spirit. I think the country is supporting them very well, and they do their best. And the German players or athletes are not that good, but we hope our best tonight.
Okay, and how many medals, what's the medal count like with Germany at the moment, do you know?
They are at the 8th rank, and they have around 20 medals.
5 gold medals and 12 silver and 10 bronze.
So how are you guys enjoying the city at the moment?
Oh, we just arrived today, so we just have a quick impression.
What's the atmosphere here that you feel, you know, you've just stepped off the plane, how do you feel, you know, being in London for the Olympics?
It's very crowded, but I think the spirit is great. You see so many flags, people from all over the world, and it's unbelievable. You have to be here.
Those were some of the sounds of Trafalgar Square in central London, right outside the front door of Canada House, where we're located today for this special edition of Midori House.
Now, the Olympics are undoubtedly the high point of the international sport in Canada, but for diplomats, it's also a time to collar decision makers and hold informal talks that would otherwise take months to schedule.
One person who's hoping to get some time with the many CEOs and politicians in London for the Games is Gordon Campbell, the Canadian High Commissioner to the United Kingdom. And I'm delighted to say Gordon joins us now. Gordon, welcome.
Thank you very much. Great to be here. Welcome to Canada House.
Thanks for having us, Commissioner Gordon. I've always wanted to say that.
Commissioner Gordon, yeah, that's a lot of people have wanted to say that.
You've got a bat sign on the top of the roof of Canada House. You didn't know that, did you, Tom?
I didn't realise that.
That's on the Wikipedia entry. It wasn't before, but I've just put it on there.
That's very good. Thank you very much. I was wondering who put it up there. You should see my outfit.
I was going to say, now the High Commissioner has come in. He's wearing a what I'd say is a regular suit, but it might be cut by Hawks of Savile Row. I can't tell that by looking at it, but the shoes... High Commissioner, talk us through those. They're a pretty beautiful pair.
I was the Premier of British Columbia and Canada hosted the 2010 Winter Olympic Games. And as you may or may not know, we had red mittens everywhere I went. I wore wet red mittens. Uh-huh. I waved to people on every media event. I had red mittens. So here in London, they've said to me, people have said, where are your red mittens? Mittens are for the winter, not for the summer. So I had to think of something else that would, you know, complement the red mittens, and therefore, you got the red shoes for the rest of the Olympics.
They're pretty dandy. I mean, is it one pair? Can we ask a personal question? Is this one pair that's seeing you through, or is it kind of a new pair every couple of days? It depends.
Well,
what,
there's a lot of demand
for them. What the parties are like,
I guess. A lot of demand, so I buy a pair of shoes and give them to someone on the street who said, could I please have a pair of red shoes? And no, it's one pair of shoes, yeah.
How do you wave in them? Do you have to do a handstand and waggle your feet?
It's a very difficult thing, and I actually introduced them at the gymnastics, and they were pretty impressive.
That's
actually
exactly how to do it.
Exactly.
Looks like a sort of possibly a
pommel
horse.
I need you in more of my life with those sorts of ideas. Thank you.
trampolining, of course, which is a notable success. That would be the perfect fit.
It would be, right? And when I talked to Rosie, she said she wished she'd had them for the event, but evidently don't let shoes on the trampoline.
That's a recipe for disaster. Now, I just wanted to ask you, obviously, you mentioned Vancouver and the Games before. What's your impression of London? How do you find London has done at hosting these Games compared with that recent Canadian experience?
You know, the interesting thing is, in spite of the fact that the Games are significantly different, so to give you, put it in context, in the Winter Olympics, maybe 3,000 coaches and athletes. In the Summer Olympics, 15,000. In our Winter Olympics, we had maybe 12 heads of state. Your Summer Olympics, maybe 120. 20,000 media here, 10,000 at the Winter Olympics. So they're completely different in scale. But it's been really interesting to see what's happened here with the Olympics, which was very similar to what happened in Vancouver. A little bit of, you know, what's going to happen, or it's not going to work. The opening ceremonies, which I think here were great, were also very well received in Vancouver. And then there's that sort of hesitancy until you win your first medal. And then you get your first gold, and then you get your second gold. And now I think the whole country's just been lifted up by the Games, and they've done, a great job of the Olympic Games and all it can do. They've said they wanted to inspire a generation. I think you'll look back and say that these Olympics inspired a generation of young people, particularly in the United Kingdom.
Oh, I certainly hope you're right.
I mean, I want everyone to go home with a pair of red shoes. I think that's the lesson that Canada can...
Well, that's going to inspire a different kind of generation. Right? It's a different kind of inspiration.
Right? It is a different type of inspiration. Right. And how's the? And do you have to sort of... Do you look on with a professional interest with about the amount of medals that Canada wins and all the rest of it? Or can you... Does it stress you out a bit? Are you kind of on the edge of your seat?
No, you know, we had a reception with a number of young Canadians who are at work in the United Kingdom, and particularly in London. And Becky Scott was there, who's a multiple Olympic medal winner. And she said, you know, one of the things for athletes is it's not, everyone would like to win a gold, but if they do the best they can possibly do in their sport on their day, that's really what they want to be able to do. And she said something that I think is really important for the Olympics. It should be fun. You know, people should be having a good time. They should love what they're doing. They should love their sport. And watch the athletes, and the ones that love their sport are the ones that are having a good time. They're winning lots of cases, but some of the ones that aren't, as long as they've done their best, it's great.
Because we spoke to one of your badminton players, and I think we're going to listen to her later on in the show, aren't we? And she was sort of bumped up because of the crazy Korean and Chinese disqualification thing. And I think it's one of those things, when you play your best, you don't feel that you've gone. I think she ended up fourth. And that's one of those things, you don't kind of feel that there's anything missing. You just kind of, you're there to compete.
Fourth in the world? I mean, when was fourth in the world something that you shouldn't be proud of? You know, as long as you do the best you can possibly do, and... You know, I think everyone puts more demands on themselves than anyone in the country does, or anyone in, you know, their city does, or their family does. So it's one of the things that's so exciting about an Olympics. It's why it's such an emotional thing for athletes. You watch athletes and the up and down, and they think of how long they've worked and how much they've done. It's why there's such an inspirational group of people here at the Olympics.
But I wonder whether for Canadian sports fans, is it always difficult to avoid looking at the Winter Olympics? I mean, is that still, do you feel that the sights are set already on Sochi in 2014? Or are people still just relishing the Summer Games?
Well, I think they'll be relishing the Summer Games. They'll be, you know, they loved the way our rowers came through. They loved the way Rosie won her gold medal. But, you know, they love the sport, right? They love the activity of sport. So obviously, coming out of 2010, we want to do very well in 2014. But, you know, we want to do very well in 2016, too. So I think what Canada did was they took a program which we called Own the Podium, and that really helps our athletes, help their coaches. And Canadians will be glued to the television now, just like they'll be glued to the television for 2014.
And how important is Canada House in all this? You're kind of hosting everyone, really, aren't you? And, well, that, and it's kind of, it's a sort of extension of the country. It's obviously, it welcomes people. It's important how people get treated in here and what kind of show you put on, isn't it?
I think it's important, yeah. And we have two specific things that are taking place. We have Canada Olympic House, which is for the Olympic athletes and their families. And I'm really pleased. They have all been very positive. It's been exciting for them. You know, honestly, you can't find very many places that would be better than Canada House on Trafalgar Square at a London Olympics. So they're right in the center of London. They're excited to be here, and I think that the staff here have done a phenomenal job, just a great job of making sure that people feel not just welcome, but part of the family. We also have an investment group that's here, and we're doing about 20 different business investment activities since the Olympics started over the 16 days, and that's gone extremely well as well.
I wanted to ask you about that, because we said that in the queue, didn't we? I don't know whether you had your headphones on then. But it was part of our quite long queue.
All I heard was red
High
shoes.
Commissioner. We were talking about like kind of the fact that it's kind of like it's a bit of an Olympics for diplomats. There's a lot of meetings that happen. You know, the side of the basketball court, or the badminton court, whatever it might be. That's a big deal as well.
Well, I think it's one of the best business opportunities that exists, because all business is about building relationships between Canada and the United Kingdom, Canada and Western Europe, different businesses. Here in Canada House, we've already seen two or three different agreements made by businesses as part of this. But it's really about building relationships and saying to people, you know, oh yeah, beach volleyball, that was great, and now let's get on with it, right? So it really is a very powerful magnet. There's not as, you know, it really is what comes out of the Olympics. I say to people, the Olympics is not a landing pad, it's a launching pad. It's what you do with it afterwards that makes the difference.
And is it, the parties are important? And as far as sort of networking and parties are concerned, because there's all sorts of stuff, you get invited to all sorts of things, you're very busy. You presumably have to throw as good a party that everyone wants to come to it, but not so good that no one can remember what happened in terms of like business deals and stuff. Is that true?
Well, I hadn't put it in quite that way. We like to throw parties.
I don't know, I'm asking. We like
to throw parties that are good enough that when people leave, they want to buy a pair of red shoes. That's how good our parties can be.
Oh, that is diplomacy in action, Tom, isn't it?
That's beautifully put. No doubt about it.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it. I've always always been one of your biggest fans.
And finally, what are you looking out for this week? Is there a specific thing that's still left that you... Maybe you fly a Canadian flag for Medal Hope, or there's something that's a particular favorite of yours sports-wise?
Well, I think everyone enjoys the track and field. Everyone enjoys the basketball. I mean, I enjoy all of those things. What I really look forward to is, to be candid, but I want the Great Britain to continue to do well. I want Canada to continue to do well and our athletes to do well. And it really is a celebration. It's a celebration of sport. And what I love about the Olympics, it's one of the few things left that brings all of the world together. And you watch them when they came in at the opening and they were all sort of, here's my country. When they come in at the closing, they'll all be mixed together and it will be a huge celebration for the athletes. So I think that's always a highlight of any Olympic Games. It shows how much we have in common if we just look for what we have in common as opposed to what divides us.
And I always think that, as you said, Tom, sort of Canada's looking forward to Winter Olympics, making Winter Olympic sports summer sports, water skiing, right? How do you make a toboggan? Kind of, how do you make that into a summer sport?
How do you make that into a summer sport?
That'd be a way. Just a bit of engineering.
I don't know.
We're working on the toboggan, actually, to be a toboggan jump into the beach volleyball. We think that would be very good.
So. I love this. This is the stuff of Batman movies. For the time being, Gordon Campbell, Canadian High Commissioner to the UK, thanks so much for joining us to talk us through the red shoes and Canada's Olympic
Thank
effort.
You. I think it may be the last time ever, but I appreciate it.
Come on.
That was great. Thanks.
We're going to have a short break now, but when we come back, we'll be hearing from an Olympic silver medalist, no less. Stay tuned.
Thailand's famous hospitality is ingrained in our culture, from the warmest of welcomes to our culinary skill. That's why hospitality businesses like the world's best cooking school, Le Cordon Bleu, come to Thailand to sample our unique mix of exquisite cuisine and transcendent service. And all this against a soundtrack of fantastic homemade music. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
It's that time of year when Monocle packs its trunks and its bikinis and heads to the beach to produce our summer resort newspaper, Monocle Mediterraneo. Our large format paper takes the temperature of the region from Liguria to Lebanon, Marseille to Mallorca.
In the design section, we discover a modernist neighbourhood in Naples, a mid-century gem in Ibiza, and a cool stone creation on Mykonos.
In the edit section, we show you how to cook the Mediterranean way with recipes for Turkish and Lebanese specialties, and we interview the food ambassadors that are shaping the restaurant scene in Italy and Greece.
And we head to Tuscany to find out where US soldiers unwind on Europe's only US military-controlled beach.
Monocle Mediterraneo is on newsstands now. It's the only beach companion you'll need this summer.
You're listening to Monocle 24, live from Canada House.
So you are indeed listening to Midori House, live from Canada House here in Trafalgar Square in the heart of London.
I quite like the girl in that promo. She's got quite a nice voice.
Are you saying...
We were sort of saying...
Prefer that to mine?
Well, no, I don't know. It's just that I slightly wish she was sitting opposite me, Tom. Oh. In a good way. It's going to be fine.
I'll
try and a sexy accent.
I'll try and take the positives from it.
we're going to go over to our silver Olympic medalist, aren't we? I think now, and that's Canada's Doug Shima. He was part of the men's rowing eight that raced to a silver medal at Eton Dorney earlier this week. And a little earlier, Doug joined us here at Canada House, silver medal in hand, and talked to Tom about his experiences of London 2012.
Actually, blew me away. My expectations. I mean, we've been going to World Championships since 2009, and it was by far the best venue we've been to in terms of the course, quality of the course, and the spectators and the fans. It was amazing.
Now, there's been a lot of coverage at some people in the Games being kind of critical of people winning silver medals, saying, oh, you know, it must be really disappointing. But, you know, when you see what especially rowers, the kind of life you have to lead to get to where you are, presumably it's just an amazing moment to be up on the podium at all, isn't it?
Absolutely. We trained 4 years full-time, 4 years for this, and we're a second away from winning, but we're also a second away from walking home with nothing. So I think some people who've been to two or three Olympics, they start really honing in on that, getting their gold medal, but this is my first Olympics, and for six out of eight of us in the crew, six out of nine of us, including the coxswain, this was our first Olympics, so it was big to have something to show for all the hard work that we've done the last 4 years.
Now, I was going to ask you about that, because obviously you mentioned those more experienced guys who won the gold back in Beijing. How much help did they provide? You know, it must still, despite your world championship experience, that kind of thing, it must have still been daunting. Was it a great help to have a few guys who'd sort of been there before?
Yeah, the Olympics is always different than any world. There's nothing that can prepare you for what it's going to feel like at the Olympics when there's 30,000 people watching. And when you know you only get the chance once every 4 years, the pressure is at a whole level that you've never experienced. And it, for us, the younger guys, especially after we came out in our first race at the regatta, the preliminary race was really not up to standard for us. And we have to look around to those experienced guys to see how they're reacting and to follow their lead when the young guys, you know, are kind of scared, to be honest. That's the best word for it. We're scared. We're anxious. We're not sure what we're doing wrong. And guys like Brian Price, who's been here since Athens, so this is his third Olympics. He was so important for the younger guys to look to, and he wasn't freaking out, so none of us freaked out, and we just stayed focused on the next race.
Fantastic, and the rest was history, of course. Now, I know you've brought your silver medal along. I just thought we could have a quick look at it. Now, you were saying before that this kind of affords you a couple of privileges around London. Tell us what it's been like sort of being around the city, having this to call upon.
Well, the first few days the first day, I don't think I took it off my neck. So everywhere I went, we were just enjoying the attention, and everywhere you'd go, people wanted to take a picture with it. People wanted to hold it and feel it and see how heavy it is. And a lot of people would ask, is it real? And it didn't take long for them to realize it was when they felt the sheer weight of it and the see the quality of, it's a really nice piece of metal. And other than that, after that, we kind of started putting them away and keeping them in the pocket. And that's fun too, because sometimes people will ask you, what sport do you do? Are you an athlete? And then you say, yeah, I came silver. And then you'll have it in your pocket, and that's even more of a surprise for some people. So it's pretty fun. It's pretty exciting. And it's awesome to share the medal with people from every country. You know, to show people a medal for the first time, they've never seen one. It's a cool feeling.
I was going to ask about that. So what's it going to be like, do you think, when you head home with the sort of, you know, the medal around your neck? Is that going to be sort of even more of a prouder moment than when you're actually on the podium, do you think?
I think that'll be... It'll be a prouder moment, but it'll be spread out over a longer period of time. So in the podium, it all hits you at once, and it's an intense feeling, hard to describe. But it's going to be an awesome, you know, first few weeks when I get home, first month, to just go around and share this with all the people that helped make it happen, really. I mean, there's a piece of so many people's support in the medal, so I feel obligated to go and show it, and it's going to be an awesome time doing it.
One thing I always find fascinating about athletes at your kind of level of achievement and performance is, how do you kind of wind down after an event like this? Do you sort of take a month off and have a complete blowout and get on the beers and pizza, or do you have to sort of ease back even into training, or do you not even think about that this soon after?
For the rest of the Olympics, I'm just going to pretty much try to relax and recover and give myself a mental break. And I don't think it'll take very long before I get the itch to start at least, you know, working out and staying fit again. But most of us don't really think about what we're going to do after, because we're just so focused on that race, that last race. You don't really think about what you're doing after, and that's why you see so many athletes kind of lose control with the McDonald's and the pizza and the beer, because they didn't really prepare themselves for it. But I'm trying to stay, you know, a little more mature about it, and trying to give my body some of the rest it needs, because it was a pretty hard race, a hard week.
I know that this evening you're going to take in some more of the other sports and Olympic action. What else are you going to see tonight, and what else are you hoping to see during the rest of your time here?
Well, I just got from a women's basketball game, and I'm heading over to a beach volleyball, women's beach volleyball. So I'm looking forward to checking out all the venues. I don't have any specific sport that I'm really looking forward to, but I just want to see all the different venues, because if anything else is like what the rowing venue is like, it's going to exceed expectations. And it's just going to the venues is almost an attraction in itself, regardless of the athletes that are putting 4 years of work on the line. So it's just going to be an awesome experience to see all the different venues.
Just one final thing. Now, I know the men's eight, the women's eight, both, you know, did fantastically well, silver medals. Some people said Canada, you know, has not done quite so well. Are there any other athletes you think can sort of get, you know, back on the podium in the remainder of this time? Any other of your sort of Team Canada teammates who you're going to be looking out for in particular?
Yeah, well, it was unfortunate to watch Simon Whitfield this morning in the triathlon. He was in a pretty good position after the swim, I think in 14th, and when he tumbled on the bike, that was, I think, one of Canada's medal hopes that went down with him when he fell. I'm not exactly sure what Canada's other big chances are. I know the women's soccer team had a really tough loss in the semis against the Americans, and if they'd won that one, they would have secured them a gold or silver, but they still have to fight for that bronze, so I'm really going to look forward to watching that one.
That was a Canadian silver medalist in the men's eight rowing team, Doug Cheema.
In the next half hour of the show, we'll be talking to a couple of CBC legends about broadcasting during the games. They're laughing, but it's true. And hearing what happened when we dispatched our man, Adrian Craddock, to the beauty salon that's on offer here at Canada House.
But before all that, let's hand back over to the studio for the news headlines with James Luckhurst.
The Syrian rebels trying to fight off an army offensive in Aleppo have said they're running low on ammunition as President Bashar al-Assad's forces encircle their stronghold at the southern entrance to the country's biggest city. President Assad has reinforced his troops in preparation for an assault to recapture rebel-held districts of Aleppo after repelling fighters from most of Damascus. The market value of Standard Charter has tumbled $15 billion after New York's bank regulator threatened to tear up its state banking license for hiding $250 billion in transactions tied to Iran. The New York State Department of Financial Services said that Standard Chartered was a rogue institution that schemed with the Iranian government, which is subject to U.S. sanctions over its nuclear program. Security sources in Egypt say work has begun to seal off smuggling tunnels into the Gaza Strip, 2 days after gunmen shot dead 16 Egyptian border guards in an attack blamed partly on Palestinian jihadi militants. As officials considered how to strike back after the assault, crowds of angry mourners wept at the military funeral for the guards in Cairo. The latest in a series of heatwaves hit Greece today, with temperatures reaching 42 degrees Celsius. The Greek Meteorological Service issued an extreme weather warning and authorities advised residents to watch for symptoms of heat stroke. And seven Cameroon athletes have disappeared while in Britain for the London Olympics, according to the head of the team. It's thought they left to stay in Europe for economic reasons. And those are the headlines here at Monocle 24.
Thank you, James, and you are listening to Midori House Live from Canada House today. Now, for many people, both in the UK and around the world, the Olympics is an event experienced through broadcast, be it television, radio, or increasingly online.
So joining us now to give us an insight into what it's like to cover the event as an international broadcaster and to reflect on how Canadian media is reporting the Olympics, we're joined by a pair of incredibly experienced CBC broadcasters who made their way to London this summer.
Heather Hiscox is host of CBC's early morning show, News Now, and she's managed to avoid the early mornings for a couple of weeks while she reports from London for the programme. And next to Heather is Matt Galloway, normally the host of Metro Morning on CBC Radio 1, but a roving sports reporter during the London Games for CBC Radio Sports. Welcome to you both.
Gentlemen, thank you.
That's a lot of backstory, wasn't it?
It was.
That's the interview done.
Thank you very much.
It's a
pleasure to meet you both. And
what is it? But is it kind of nice for both of you guys to sort of have jet lag the other way as well? Because I know you both kind of have to get up at the crack of dawn back home.
2:30, I get up. Matt's pretty close to that.
Yeah,
I know.
At about 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up. Yeah.
So this is entirely civilized. We should do our morning shows from London all the time.
You're welcome into this quite warm medal room anytime you want, guys. And how's it been? I mean, do you have to sort of gen up a lot? I mean, I know you have a sports show, Matt, but I mean, is it?
But it's sports and many other things. So we are talking about the results and talking about the important things that are happening on the field of play. But a lot of what we're talking about is sort of the context of that. So what's happening in the city? What's happening around the city? How people in this amazing town are actually interpreting what they're seeing. And that's as important to us as actually talking about the results.
And we should say, shouldn't we, that CBC aren't the official broadcaster at the moment in Canada for the Olympics.
Which makes things interesting.
Does it kind of give you a bit more creativity to kind of speak around the games rather than just purely about them?
It's an interesting way of putting it, creativity.
I'm writing your own press releases for you.
You're not trying to find. The danger is that you could be trying to find content to put on the air because you don't have the rights that the other guy does. You're not inside the wire, you're outside the wire. But it's right, we do have more creativity and freedom, particularly just in what we're doing. Again, we would do, and we did a similar show to this when we were in Beijing 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. Here, you are a little bit freer to talk to people in a different way, talk to different people, pull different things in. It's a different time in terms of the amount of media and the way that people can access media as well. So yeah, it opens things up a little bit for us.
And you guess you get to look at the town, and rather than just being stuck in the Olympic Village, you're going out and about and doing a bit more other stuff, right, Heather?
Matt, for sure. Matt's really roving around and bringing that to radio. We're stuck, but it's a wonderful place to be stuck. Our studio is right in Trafalgar Square. So for non-rights holders, I can't tell you, it's couldn't be better situation.
It's not like there's no passing traffic to interview.
It's so lively. And we're, you know, 100 meters from Canada Olympic House, so all kinds of Canadians are coming by, athletes and families and fans and friends, and it's been very, very dynamic. But I think Matt's right. I mean, for television, we've learned a lot from not holding the rights. We traditionally have had the rights, but we lost the rights for Vancouver, our home Olympics, and then we have lost them again for these games. We get them back for Rio and Sochi. But it's been really interesting. You think, what can I do if I don't have the pictures to show of this race? Well, number one, we've learned the value in television of still photos, because still photos, at the right moment, they can capture the entire competition in a beautiful photo. So in some ways, it tells the story as well as the visuals. And as Matt said, I don't know if I use creativity, but I use liberating. You're not bound to tell the story of the results. We are. We're doing a lot of sports coverage. I'm a big sports fan, and I'm a news person, basically, but I love sports and love to tell the sports stories. But you can talk to... We have interviews coming up this week with Jane Packer, who's done the floral bouquets, you know, I don't know how many thousand the floral bouquets they're doing, and... people getting their nails done, all the people, the athletes, the 204 flags that have become popular nail art, just things that you might not necessarily do, we're bringing those stories. So, as Matt said, Canadians are getting the experience, what it's like in the host city, from many different perspectives.
Now, Heather, I wanted to ask you about the attitude towards the team, because some broadcasters, we were talking before about Australia, the media there has been very critical of their athletes, and they claim they're underperforming, and it's almost been quite a sort of unpleasant atmosphere in the press. Has this slight detachment from covering the games given an increase in sort of objectivity almost in terms of how you assess the team's performance?
You start.
I was at the Maple Leaf Bar last night watching Canada take on the United States in semifinal soccer. Mm-hmm. I was anything but impartial. There's a picture of me in the Toronto Star this morning, standing with a beer in one hand and my fist in the other as Canada scored, I think, its second goal. I think you can cross a line occasionally.
I wonder what was going to be in your other hand there. You kind of trotted.
My phone was flying through the air as well. I think you can get caught up in it. You can be part of the home team. You do have to remain objective at some degree, but I think it's dangerous. Canada hasn't performed particularly as well as some people would have hoped. It's dangerous to slip into a really negative narrative and say the team is not doing well. What Australia has been doing, I think, in the press is a little dangerous, because you beat down those athletes who, you heard from Gordon Campbell, are finishing fourth, fifth, or sixth. Fifth in the world is pretty amazing. You have to acknowledge that, but you also have to acknowledge, and we had a debate on our show about, is this about winning or is it about trying hard? And a lot of people responded very strongly to that, saying this is not just about winning, it's actually about trying to come and prove your best and put your good image of the nation forward, your Canadian brand, if I can put it that way.
But it's interesting. Canadians, we adopted this program that Gordon Campbell mentioned, Own the Podium, about 7 years ago. And when Canada did, you know, traditionally we show up and isn't that great? We're, you know, personal best, that's great. We're here, we're showing up, we're participating. And then we put this program out there. We're funding people who have legitimate medal chances, and you're the people who are getting the money. And in Canada, people went, ooh, that's not really a typical Canadian response. And then in Vancouver, we were really overt about, we're going to own the podium. We've got this new swagger, and we were actually criticized in Sports Illustrated and a bunch of different magazines for, who is this new Canadian athlete? You know, what's this new attitude? So it is a delicate balance, because you want to encourage. I mean, they've had some incredible performances, and yet I have the head of On the Podium coming on tomorrow, and I as I was walking over here, I'm thinking about how I start to bring that around, because the first week in Beijing, Canada didn't get a medal until day 8, so there was all this angsting over the first week. This week, we had a much more active and successful first week, but we've really stalled at this point, and some of the medal hopes have not performed as they hoped, as the country hoped. And so you have to ask the whys, but I think you're right, it's a balance. I don't think you want to slam them, because you know they're not here to, they're not slacking off. Nobody's slacking off. But what is it? Is it psychologic? Is there something in the training?
Are you just not good enough?
are you just not good enough? So these are the questions you have to start.
Affects, yeah, I wonder how that affects the figures, because, you know, there was a strange moment. The UK had such an amazing golden weekend, and you could almost feel that I think it was last night, it was sort of a bit of an anti-climax. If someone won a gold, maybe, and there was the show jumpers. But it was a bit strange. It was kind of not this gold rush that had happened before. And there was sort of like a bit of grasping around, you felt, from the BBC, slightly. And that's the kind of thing. Do you see how it directly correlates to the viewing figures?
We have a lot of people who are still really interested in what's going on. I just know this from the response that I'm getting as the show goes out live through Twitter, through text and Facebook and things like that. I think there's... and I saw this last night again at the pub, where I've never been in a room that has had more people in it. I don't know whether there are not capacity laws in the UK where you can just kind of keep cramming people in.
There's a lot of very small pubs in London.
Well, they stuff them in. So there's real interest in that still, even if we are a nation that is winning fourth place, I think. I think you'll start to see this change in the next couple of days, because there is the possibility of more gold medals for Canada. But right now, there's still an interest. You hope that continues, because... there are a few days left.
Mm. Now I wanted to ask you, aside from the overfilled public houses, what are the key differences, do you think, between your experience as a broadcaster in London as against previous games? Has this been a happier place to be, or has there been any kind of particular challenges that London has posed?
Well, this is my fifth games. I've been. It's been.
Sorry.
Well,
you can tell.
I'm trying to. It's radio, so this is probably safe to say. But when we were in Athens, you won't have an image to directly conjure up, or to. But you know, in Athens, which was my first Olympics, what a thrill to go back to the birthplace of the modern games. But it was literally hurry up, and things were barely finished by the time we arrived. So, I didn't even have. There wasn't even a shower curtain, is the image. There wasn't even a shower curtain in the media village. You know, it was pretty rudimentary. And I would say I didn't go to Sydney. Everyone talks about the Sydney Summer Games as being, you know, the people's games and the wonderful spirit that permeated that city. And I haven't felt it, but I do feel it here, and I think it's quite remarkable because it's such a big city and it's already so alive. So that it can take on that extra tone, I think, is quite something. I was in Turin, flat. Beijing, huge, and I think largely flat. Life went on, separately from the games to a large extent. Vancouver, I would say, from my Olympic experiences, is probably the best parallel. You know, we had zip lining in the center of the city, all sorts of people out, everybody in their colors and the mittens that Gordon Campbell was referring to, and it was a real celebration. And I'm seeing it in Trafalgar Square. People are gathering there in all of their Mexican, we had some Mexican dances.
You see
it
everywhere. I mean, you see it when I was in Hackney on the weekend, you see it when I was in Brixton, you see it in all these different communities, which are very different in London, similar to Toronto. A sense of enthusiasm that perhaps is surprising. Again, in Hackney, hipsterville, but it's close to the Olympic Village and the Olympic Centre.
And everyone's got it on their TV. It's on in every pub. Everyone's very, very kind of proud of it, I think. It doesn't matter how too cool for school you are.
So as your gold medal tally goes up, so will the pride level, sure.
No, it's good. And how does it work? Is Canada a small world? Does it get centred around Canada House here? Is it quite a focal point here? I mean, for the kind of Canadian effort and for the Canadian media effort.
You see a lot, for the media, I'm not entirely sure, but you see a lot of Canadian fans around here. You see so many people. And it's an interesting thing. We talked about this at the soccer last night, that people in Canada are often pretty reluctant to wave their flag or wear it as a cape. We look at the United States and we say, your nationalism is sort of embarrassing compared to what we do in Canada. Yet you leave and people feel relieved and free to do that. And so many people are painting the maple leaf on their flags and on their faces and wearing the flag as a cape or as a scarf. That's a brilliant thing, and you see it all around here.
Nice. Well, for the time being, Heather Hiscox and Matt Galloway from CBC, thanks for joining us on Midori House.
Glad to be here. Cheers.
Thanks for inviting us.
Well, Canada House here is all about family and friends and creating a welcoming and warm environment for the guests who arrive here. So to tell me a little more, Dimitri Soudas from the Canadian Olympic Committee gave me a guided tour of the venue a bit earlier today.
Canada Olympic House is what we call home away from home for families, parents, siblings, spouses of our Olympians. And one of the key priorities is to make sure that while our athletes are on the field of play or in the village getting ready to compete, that they don't have to worry about if their parents and if their families and their friends are taken care of. So we've made sure to make this a very homey environment. For example, right over here, you have P&G that's set up both a beauty and grooming area where moms, dads can go upstairs for a shave or get their hair done. Also, people can bring in their laundry and get it done by Tide. So this is kind of where we are right now. It's the greeting area where people really enter Canada Olympic House. Also, we have a bell hotspot for people who want to surf the web. And obviously, one of the most exciting places, you know, during the Olympic Games, you see people dressed in their national colors. And HBC, Hudson's Bay Company, is our official apparel designer. And they have a great store over here, which we've also opened up to the public. And I would dare say that the team, Canadian Olympic team gear and clothing is by far the best than any other country.
And what kind of reaction do you get then when everyone goes out in their Canada, Team Canada apparel out in the streets? Has it been good reaction from Londoners and other Olympic visitors?
Absolutely. I think Canadians are extremely well liked. And when we get to wear such great gear, often people even want to trade, trade their jackets, not only pins. So it's absolutely great to see fellow Canadians. It's also absolutely great to also to see the reaction from other people who say, hey, you know, go Canada, go.
So, Dimitri, tell us about some of the other areas that we have here. What else is going on? Because it's a very kind of busy. It seems a very busy environment here at Canada House.
The main area is inside the main room where we have television screens pretty much covering every single wall, with a giant screen set up right up front where we're watching competitions of our athletes compete all day. So, for example, today we had Simon Whitfield in triathlon. Later on tonight we have Alexandre Petit in diving. So it's an opportunity for again. Families, friends, parents of our athletes to be able to see their children, their spouses compete for those that, you know, don't go to the venues because they have or don't have tickets.
Now, it intrigues me. It's very kind of active. There's so much happening. Is it ever difficult to sort of manage a brand when there's so much going on and there's so much demands on the time of the team and all the people involved? Is it hard to manage a brand then, or do you find it's an easier process to manage?
Well, our number one priority is always our athletes. That's what we always focus on. And if you see the brand that is on display pretty much on every single corner is always focused and centered around the athletes. And it's easy to manage a brand when the key element around the brand is always on display. So if you go inside, you'll see, you know, banners and pictures of our athletes. And one of the things we did recently was we launched the brand campaign, the Give Your Everything campaign. Even if you go on Twitter, the hashtag is Give Your Everything. So our focus again for that brand campaign, and we have television screens outside playing those brand ads, is focused around the athlete. And it becomes extremely, it's easy on one sense when you're focused on what matters most to your audience, which are the athletes. But also making sure that you don't stray from that is critically important. So, you know, it's always, there are always challenges, but, you know, they say excellence never is easy. So one thing we do at the Canadian Olympic Committee is always make sure that we have exactly what we need to do. We have exactly what we need on focusing on our brand. So we pay a lot of attention to that. Main area here where you have family, friends, everybody's eyes are glued to the screens. And we obviously serve high-quality, healthy lunches and suppers here every single day. And for those who get a little bit thirsty, they can go a little bit far down, and there's a Molson Canadian bar where people can get authentic Canadian beer and cheer on our athletes as they watch the games.
Now, we were chatting earlier with a member of your men's eight who'd obviously recorded a great silver medal. What's the atmosphere been like in here when these sort of medal triumphs have been taking place? Has it gone crazy?
Oh, absolutely. There's two things that happen. Sometimes medalists, you know, the same day after winning a medal, they'll pop in and surprise everybody and mingle and chat, and people can take pictures with them and their medals. But one thing we want to do again, and as I said earlier, our main focus at the Canadian Olympic Committee is squarely our athletes. So after every single medal victory, we have a medal celebration. So the athlete comes and we have an entire event in order to celebrate their victory. So the Olympian goes up on stage, says a few words, and, you know, we've had to stick the roof back onto the building a couple of nights because people have literally blown it off.
Just finally on that theme, how's Team Canada doing? I mean, what's the performance been like? Are people pretty happy?
You know, it's... sport is sport, so you never know what happens. One of the things we set out as an objective before the game started was to be amongst top 12 nations in total medals. And we always saw that as an ambitious objective, one that would require a lot of work in order to achieve it. You know, in Beijing, we finished in 14th place. So we've set out an ambitious objective to be top 12. As we stand right now, We are in 12th place in overall medals, but there's 6-7 days left of competition, and what really matters the most is that our athletes are performing on the field of play, and we'll see on closing ceremonies day. But regardless of the result on August the 12th, this has been a great games for our athletes, and once again, Canada is shining on the world stage.
That was Dimitris Soudas giving me a tour of Canada House earlier today.
It's 6:50 p.m. here at Canada House, and still to come, the Monocle team gets a beauty treatment. How could you possibly miss that?
Modern Thailand is on the move. Take transport. We're building urban mass transit systems and a $15.4 billion high-speed rail link that will crisscross the country faster than ever before. We've even developed a solar-powered prototype of our famous tuk-tuks for a greener urban journey. And if you think that sounds good, wait until you hear our homegrown teapot. To find out more, visit modern-thailand.com.
You're listening to Monocle 24, live from Canada House.
Welcome back to Midori House, live indeed at Canada House with me, Tom Edwards, and Rob Bound.
As we heard earlier in the show, Canada House isn't just a place to cheer the Canadians on. It's also a place for athletes and their families to relax and rewind. Rewind? Unwind.
I think they'd be unwinding. If they rewound, that would look, frankly, very odd.
That would look really weird. Imagine like watching the swimming and rewound.
Be impressive. Dive out of a pool backwards.
Some of them look like that anyway, though, don't they?
That's true.
Anyway, to relax and unwind outside the bustle of the Olympic show.
One of the house's most popular facilities is its pop-up beauty parlour. From hot towel shaves to hair curls, the parlour is a popular way for athletes to get their minds off the stresses of competition.
And we thought we'd make the most of this opportunity by sending down one of our scruffier, not to say smellier, reporters, Adrian Craddock, to sample the services on offer.
What are you doing to Adrian right now?
Well, we're just preparing him for his wet hot towel shave.
How are you feeling, Adrian?
A bit concerned about this. I don't want this to kind of conflict with my existing beauty regime, which is actually quite strict. I just want this to be... and I'm getting lowered down here for the
just
second.
Kind of lean you
just
back.
Leaning back.
Fantastic.
Oh, here we go.
That's great. If you just relax. What we're going to start off by doing today is we're just going to start to soften the facial hair with some hot water. Once we've done that... and the face is nice and moist, then what we can move on to do is use the Gillette facial scrub, which is going to help exfoliate the skin and soften any tough hair before we start the shave. This is pretty imperative before any sort of shaving regime. If the hairs on your face are quite hard and brittle still, you're going to find that you're going to get a little tug, so it's important that we do keep it as soft as possible.
So would you recommend that for any man as part of their shaving routine?
I mean, definitely. If you are looking to... shave, then you should definitely be doing it once you've just got out of the shower. That's the best time to do it because all your pores are open and the hair's going to be its softest just then.
So you're just rubbing that through Adrian's face there?
Absolutely. It's just a very light exfoliating scrub.
How does that feel, Adrian?
It feels quite relaxy, actually. It's really nice on the old chin. Sorry.
So we've got some sponges out here. What's happening now?
Now, with these sponges, I'm using hot water, and we're just using this to remove the facial scrub from your face. If you are planning to shave, then I do definitely recommend that you remove any soap from the face before you do start the shave. Otherwise, that's going to clog up your pores, and it isn't going to help your skin.
Oh, interesting.
Is it too late to get out of this?
So you're really cleaning that there.
Absolutely. Right, the next thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to be applying some hot towels to Adrian's face. Okay, now again, it's very important that your facial hair and the pores of your skin are open before you start the shave, because this is what's going to give you the cleanest shave possible. Okay, and you can see what I'm going to do with these hot towels. I'm going to place one over Adrian's neck. Around there. It's quite a soothing effect. How does that feel to you, Adrian?
No, it feels good. It feels nice.
One, so we're just covering the chin.
So Adrian looks like he's wearing kind of towel-based neck brace now.
A little bit like the mummy effect.
Yeah, it's always a mummy, kind of bandaged from the chin down.
And the last one that we're going to use is we're going to pop just over his moustache. So you can see any area where we're shaving is completely covered.
Okay. And how long are you going to hold that down for?
We're just going to hold it there for just under a minute.
And Adrian, does Adrian have to remain still the entire
Adrian
time?
Adrian's okay. You can see we've just got the mouth showing, so if Adrian's uncomfortable at all, he can...
I'm fine. Doing very well here.
I'm looking forward to seeing the net result of this.
Do you have any skin problems at all, Adrian?
Not really.
Do you get any irritation when shaving?
I do kind of use like a sensitive aftershave.
Fantastic. If I could just turn your head to the side, that's perfect. Thank you very much. Now again, I'm just going to apply a little water to the face. It's imperative, again, when shaving, that you do keep your face as moist as possible.
Mm-hmm. So what are we doing now? We're applying some shaving foam with a brush.
The shaving foam with, yes, absolutely.
And I notice you're not putting it on very thick there. Is that... normal? Are you just slowly layering it up?
Slowly layering it up. Exfoliating the skin with the brush before we shave.
How does that feel, Adrian?
I'm just really being lulled here into a sense of security. I'm really, because I'm tilted back here, just getting, you know, a bit of shaving cream on the chin. Just been every Wednesday like this.
Okay, just tilt your head, Adrian. That's perfect. Now, what I'm going to do at this first part by the ear, we're just gently stretching the skin. We're going to use the blade and come straight down the face and then off to the side. So we're trying to catch as much hair in as less strokes as possible.
So you're kind of going down the face and then across the chin and the neck.
To start with, from the face onto the chin and the neck. Once I've done one area of the face, what I like to do is go over it and then we're going to go against the grain. This is how I think you get the closest shave.
So the final stage of this shaving process nearly complete. Adrian's tiny moustache has been removed.
Fluffy moustache. It was pretty popular in the last year of high school, but I think it's time to move on.
Time to move on, Adrian.
Time to move on. Goodbye, old friend.
That was Monocle's Adrian Craddock getting some, I must say, much-needed work done at Canada House's in-house beauty parlour with our producer, Katie Bilboa. And Adrian, I'm wary about saying, joins us now.
Hello, chaps. Do you know, the big elephant in the room with that little segment is he actually nicked me quite badly on the chin.
Oh, yeah.
And as I was shaking, I said, oh, thank you so much for that. I had blood gushing down my chin, kind of falling onto the ground.
I'm afraid I didn't notice that significant wound, unfortunately.
I'm a pro, mate. I was keeping it together.
My favourite part of that pre-recorded item, Adrian, was the question, do you have any skin problems, Adrian?
I thought that was a bit too probing. I thought that was quite a personal question.
I think anyone tuning into that segment also halfway through might not have known what it was about.
Mm.
I mean, I don't mean that to be a sort of sign of bad radio in any sense, but it did sound...
It's clear to all that was top quality broadcasting.
It had a sort of very much a homoerotic element to it, didn't it?
I didn't read into that.
Did you not?
I don't know. Maybe that's your reading.
But just while we're on that subject, Adrian, I mean, do you have any other sort of personal, intimate medical conditions you'd like to share with us in the world?
I do have a rash on the back of my
arm. Oh, dear
just
me.
I want to know what the point of this Canada House in-house massage parlour is, whatever it was.
Basically, I think it's just for the athletes to relax. I mean, there were kind of, you know, world-class boxers going in there, having their hair done, you know, female boxers and stuff like that. It seemed quite popular.
All right. Well, you look beautiful, Adrian Craddock, may we say.
Thank you.
All right. That's all we have time for today. Our producer was Katie Bilboa, with the help from Adrian Craddock, Paul Noble and Toby Hammond. Thanks to everyone here at Canada House for being such wonderful hosts, and to Alex Funnell back at Monocle HQ for keeping us on air.
We'll be continuing our Olympic tour tomorrow when our team heads to Denmark House for some Viking activity. For now, on Monocle 24, stay tuned for the latest episode of Section D, which is up next after the news.
But from all of us here at Canada House, it's goodbye for now. I'm Robert Bound.
And I'm Tom Edwards.
To play us out, here are two of our resident Canadians, Hannah Jenkins and David Michon, singing the Canadian National Anthem. Thanks for tuning in.
Oh, Canada, our home and native land, true patriot love in all our sons command.
We're going to have to stop.